25 years on the PGA Tour and a lifetime member of the PGA Tour and PGA of America. Jay Delsing brings you his perspective on one of the world's greatest games as a professional golfer and network broadcaster. It's the game that connects the pros and the average Joes. Brought to you by Whitmore Country Club. Golf with Jay Delsing is now on 101 ESPN.
Good morning, St. Louis, and welcome to Golf with Jay Delsing on 101 ESPN. I'm your host, Jay. I've got John Perlis with me. Good morning, Perlie.
Good morning, Jay. I love that opening. 25 years. You ever think of how many rounds of golf you played in 25 years?
You know, there's something on my website, my old website, where you used to have how many different golf courses I played and how many miles I've actually walked, and this was stunning. No wonder every part of my body hurts. I think at last count, and this was several years ago, I was at 61,000 miles.
That's amazing, but you say your body hurts. I know when we're out there, sometimes the things that beat you up the worst are sitting on the airplanes, on and off the airplanes, in and out of the rental cars, in and out of the hotels. Right. So the golf is tough on it, no question, because you guys are doing something, you know, really stressing your body out. But I would contend those others had at least as much to do with the aches and pains.
No question about it. Our first segment is we have formatted the show like around the golf. So the On the Range segment is formatted by my friends at 20 Minutes of Fitness. 20 Minutes of Fitness once a week. 20 Minutes of Fitness, that's all you need. It works for me. And, you know, if it wouldn't be for somebody like 20 Minutes of Fitness or some sort of exercise program, man, I could have never played nearly as long as I did.
And it would have been cool if you would have started that 25 years ago.
What, 20 Minutes of Fitness?
Yes.
I started all of the wrong stuff 25 years ago, and now 20 Minutes of Fitness is trying to save me, and it's not.
And they're saving you.
I know, they're saving me, but I don't know if they can keep the rate up as we continue
they
to
age. They
can't
turn the clock back exactly. Well, they're just holding that handle down so it doesn't keep moving.
No, they can't. Well, we've got a great show for you today. Let's go straight away to our friend Justin Hoagland at Golf Tech. Justin is a fellow PGA of America member and professional and city manager for Golf Tech. So let's jump in with Justin. Okay, that's great stuff from Justin, and I'm excited about this show. We have got the first half of the David Faraday interview, and man, I think people are going to love this thing.
I was so excited when you got him. I mean, I don't know that people realize how many incredible interviews you're going to have on this show, but I'm not sure how many are going to be better than David Faraday.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, when you think about a whiteboard, you know, where there's nothing on it, and you do your prep because you know, you want to be respectful to your guests and you want to be informed and you want to make this interview sound right and sound meaningful. And I think I mentioned even to him, I'm like, I've prepared for this and I feel so unprepared because you just never know where he's going to go.
Why do you think he's so popular, Jay? Is there a formula here? What is it that gets us?
Well, when I'm with him, I always tell him it's his fake accent, that fake Irish accent. But we all know it's there's nothing fake about that Irish accent. But he, you know what I think it is? It's his candor. He is extremely upfront. He is real. And the thing that I think people relate to the most are the trials, the tribulations, the failures, and I hate to say failures because we all have those, just the setbacks.
Let's
the
challenges.
Setbacks, the challenges. And, you know, here's a guy that's, oh, man, bipolar disorder. Alcoholic, was hooked on Vicodin and painkillers and hooked on golf. You know, there's a lot of addiction there. And being facetious, obviously, with the golf statement. But and he just throws it out there. His honesty, his ability to be authentic. I mean, most people stuff these things in a closet and don't want anybody to shine any light on them. And to his credit, he's like, shine the light on it, man. Come and look at it. This is who I am.
Well, people seem to like, and you see this in sports all the time, they like to see the guy at the top, I'm not sure like to see it, but get knocked off the perch, however it may happen. I think David kind of knocked himself off the perch time and time again. But I think what people like even more is to see these people climb back up to a fantastic place. We're seeing the same thing in many ways with Tiger, right? There's a guy that went from couldn't do anything wrong to, oh my gosh, what is in his closet?
Right.
And unfortunately, we got to see a bunch of that. But boy, the fans have received him with open arms. And I think they've done that with David from time to time. And I think we're seeing Tiger with a little bit more real, a little bit more candor, a little bit more human. And I think he's enjoying it. And David has clearly embraced it. And maybe, and I guess I didn't realize they were such good friends.
Yep. He probably, and he says this on the second part of the interview that you'll hear next week, I think he was probably part of 50 or 60 of Tiger's 80-something wins.
As far as watching and on-course commentating?
Yeah, right. Okay. And, you know, the other thing that comes to mind when I think of David Faraday is John Daly. John Daly is still, once he plays on a PGA Tour event, you know, he's playing Champions stuff now, PGA Tour Champions, but when he still plays the odd PGA Tour event, he is still in the top three of the most popular, most followed players. And it's because there's another real guy.
Yeah.
He's you know, been diagnosed with alcoholism, and he still drinks. He's been obese, and he's lost his weight. He's gained it back. He's found his weight. He's lost it. You know, it kind of goes back and forth.
He hangs his laundry out there, literally, I think, out when he's riding around in his camper.
He absolutely throws it right out there for everybody to look at, and I think there's just this crazy, endearing character about that, and that's how it is for me.
And I love these guys like Faraday. Now he's got that show that he does, and it's kind of a comedy show, real show, etc. And Daly had his songs, and didn't he have it actually a group? And he's out there playing, and then he's also putting up concession stands. I think he still does outside the Masters, selling stuff. I mean, it's amazing.
It's always attached to a local Hooters. I don't know. You all make your own judgments on that.
I won't go anywhere on that
we
one.
We probably shouldn't.
Okay.
Probably shouldn't. I can't see where it's going to help us in any way. So what we're going to do, folks, is we're going to do some of our normal stuff. Instead of in the front nine segment to read our email winner, we're going to read it at the tail end of this On the Range segment, and then we're going to have Faraday for you, front nine and back nine, and then we're going to talk about it. And I can't wait. I think it's, you all can decide for yourself, but why don't we go ahead and read the winner. So anyone that reaches out to us, you have your emails, questions, comments, a rules situation, anything you think might be interesting, email it to me at j@jdelsinggolf.com. If we read your statement, your email on the air, you get two rounds of golf at Gateway National. It's a great thing. Compliments of Walter's Golf Management. And today's winner is?
Yeah, the email is from Joe. I struggle around the greens. Should I open the face of my wedge? Should I keep it square? Should I use my wedge? Should I use my putter whenever I get a chance to use my putter? I'm just kind of caught in between and confused.
Yeah, and I see this all the time. I mean, probably the thing that jumps out of my mind, Pearl, about that statement that Joe, and Joe, thanks for reaching out to the show. The thing that the worst part of what I heard in there is a confusion, you know, because you'll see, you'll hang out and see somebody that knows how to play the game. They've been around the game a lot, and they'll have some homemadeness in their game where they like to, maybe they only like to use their 60-degree wedge, and you know, sometimes they'll shut it down to hit a little lower shot, and that's all fine. But when you're confused and you don't know, and I'm sure there's some chili dipping going on, and I'm sure there's some sculling going on, what I would do first for Joe is identify where his strengths are, and if you're a good putter, and you can putt, you know, from say 6 to 8 feet off the edge of the greens, go ahead and do it, Joe. And if this is Joe Schieser, I just can't imagine.
Well, I'm laughing too, because when in doubt, by the way, I'm going to say it: grab the putter.
Absolutely.
Because the worst chip, the worst putt is going to be 10 times better than the worst chip.
There's been many of those old kind of lousy cliche sort of things that have been around in the game of golf, but that one is really true. The worst putt is going to be a multitude times better than the worst chip. And One of the things that you're going to have to do, though, when you encounter rough, you're going to have to get your wedge out, okay? And the biggest thing about your wedge, I'm a proponent of get your hands about even with the ball. Don't get your hands too far forward. You do not need to open the face of your wedge. But what you do need to have is angle on your back, your backswing and your downswing. So you need to have the club lifted up a little bit so that the grass isn't interfering with the face as it comes into swing with a ball. And then you're going to be able to drop that wedge right on the back of the ball and pop it up in the air. And that's a shot. I'll say this. Universally, I've been around the world playing this great game. Universally, that is the single biggest thing that amateurs struggle with, is trying to figure out how to hit a short shot high.
And I love when you said earlier committing, and that's why I started laughing. Because I can remember throwing you under the bus here. It's time for that, by the way. It's that time of the show. You would get incredibly committed on chip shots that I couldn't have disagreed with more. And the bottom line is, though, because you were committed, you would pull them off certainly more times than not, and sometimes extremely well. It just really makes that point that even if it's the wrong idea, if you're completely bought into it, it's got a good chance of working out. The thing that's never going to work, even if you're right, is if you're not committed.
No question. And you're not building anything. That commitment is absolutely crucial. That is a foundational block that we want to have in our games, and it's committed to what we're doing, even if it's the wrong club, not necessarily the correct shot for that moment on the golf course. So that's going to do it for the On the Range segment. We're going to take a short break. But stay with us. We're going to have the David Faraday interview that's going to start on the front nine. This is Golf with Jay Delsing on 101 ESPN.
Doster, Olam & Boyle, LLC are a proud sponsor of Golf with Jay Delsing here on 101 ESPN. The firm was started in January 2015 by Mike Doster, Jess Olam, and John Boyle, three veterans of the St. Louis real estate, banking, commercial, and corporate legal landscape. The firm was founded on the shared view that success should be measured by client and community satisfaction, not profits for partner. The firm's focus is on business, real estate, corporate, finance and restructuring, and succession planning. Since its founding in 2015, Doster, Olam & Boyle have been involved in real estate, business, and corporate transactions with a combined value in excess of over $1 billion. For decades, Doster, Olam & Boyle lawyers have been recognized as leaders in their practice areas by their peers. Doster, Olam & Boyle, LLC. Extraordinary talent, ordinary people. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
I just wanted to let you know that USA Mortgage has lowered its rates this month. That's right, they've lowered their rates. We are keeping them down as long as we can to take advantage of the great real estate market this spring. Buyers are flooding the market, values are going up, and USA Mortgage is ready to help you with you and your pre-approval, refi, or cash out opportunity. We can help you eliminate your mortgage insurance, shorten your term, or pay off debt. Please call Joe Schieser at 314-628-2015 to apply or get sound financial advice for your mortgage needs. Hurry while the rates are still low. You can apply online at usamortgage.com/Joe Schieser. That's S-C-H-I-E-S-Z-E-R. Or call him directly at 314-628-2015. NMLS number 231118.
Urban Chestnut Brewing Company is proud to be an official sponsor of 101 ESPN's newest show, Golf with our friend Jay Delsing. Just like Jay, Urban Chestnut is born right here in St. Louis. With three local brewing and restaurant locations, you won't travel far to sample straight from the source. If you're heading out to the links this weekend, or if you're just in the mood for a classic German-style beer, grab a four-pack of our fresh, refreshing Zwickel Bavarian Lager wherever craft beers are sold. Urban Chestnut Brewing Company, St. Louis, Missouri. Prost!
You're listening to Golf with Jay Delsing on 101 ESPN. You can find Jay online at jdelsinggolf.com.
Welcome back. This is Golf with Jay Delsing. I'm your host, Jay. I've got John Perlis here with me, and this is our segment we call The Front Nine, and we are going to go directly into the David Faraday interview. So have a listen and enjoy.
I'm delighted to be sitting down with David Faraday right now. David, thanks so much for joining us. And I don't know if I've ever sat down with someone that I tried to prepare for this, and I really feel about as unprepared for this conversation as anything I've ever done.
Oh, excellent. That's the way I like it. You know, I don't like I'm so attention deficit that anytime I prepare for something, you know, I always forget what the hell it was I was preparing for. So I think we're on the same page.
That's probably why we get along so well, which is probably a scary thing.
Yeah, really. We've got a lot of history, most of which I've forgotten.
That should be forgotten and won't be spoken of today, that's for sure. You know, I just want to go over just a few things to talk about your golf career a little bit. And I know you're very humble about this, but I did some research. I mean, 10 worldwide wins, 2 Ryder Cup appearances for the European team. You know, back in the day, we played for no money. I mean, even in Europe, you guys played for less money than we played, and we weren't playing for anything over in the U.S. And, gosh, when I met you, we had so much fun together, and you were playing over here. I know it was a difficult time in your life, and this TV opportunity came along, and you were really ready to retire, weren't you?
Oh, yeah, I was more than ready to retire. I was in, it was one of the lowest points of my life. I was in the middle of a horrific divorce, a spectacular divorce, you know, back page of the tabloids in the UK and all kinds of things. I was drinking like a halibut. I got into painkillers, and that's what alcohol was for me. You know, it was a painkiller as well. You know, so when the TV opportunity came around, you know, I was only 36. And initially I said to them, look, I think I've got a little golf left in me. You know, I would love to do this job in maybe 4 or 5 years. And then they told me how much they were going to pay me. And I said, would you like to buy a set of clubs?
These are for sale officially as of right now. That's fantastic. And how was the transition? How did you make that transition? It seemed so smoothly to all of us to go from, you know, playing to, you know, an Irish guy. You've been over in the States just a couple of years, and now all of a sudden you're on a major network calling golf.
Well, it wasn't really, I don't think you could call it a transition. It was such an abrupt halt. I was, I'd won a tournament in some communist country, I don't know where the hell it was, and I qualified for the World Series in 95 or 96, whenever it was. And I was approached by a couple of gentlemen from CBS at the bar in the Hilton in Akron. We were playing at Firestone, and I don't know what I shot the first round. It wasn't particularly good. And, you know, a guy sticks his hand out and said, we're from CBS. And I thought, oh, Jesus, 60 minutes. This is going to be some fearless expose on drugs in sport or something like that. And but it turns out Ben Wright had been fired. And they were looking for somebody that knew the players on both sides of the Atlantic, that knew the caddies on both sides of the Atlantic. And as you know, the caddies are they're a vital part of television, televised golf. You know, that's where people get most of their information, especially on the golf course, you know, hand signals for clubs and, you know, a little sort of backstories about the players and, you know, things like that. So I just happened to be the right drunk in the right bar at the right time. And, you know, I said, yes, you know, I'll do it. And, you know, they handed me a microphone 2 days later, and that was it.
You never really looked back, did you? I remember talking to you, seeing you probably a year after that, and you said, oh, my gosh, man, I don't miss this at all.
No, I've never missed it. And you know, when I turned pro at 17 with a 5 handicap, I lied about my handicap so that I could turn pro. And I never thought that it was what I would do for the rest of my life. I thought I'd be lucky to get I thought I'd be lucky to ever be good enough to make a living playing the game. And when it came toward the end of my career, I wasn't, you know, making a living. I was in such bad shape emotionally because of this divorce. And I moved to America, to be with my 2 sons. I was playing the German Open in 1993, and the woman I was married to just up and left, went to Dallas. So that's how I ended up in this country.
I remember talking to you, and I remember some of the heartache that you were going through then, and following those boys around is so admirable, and exactly what I would have done and just kind of ripped your heart out, I think, at the time.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a tough thing. You know, being a professional golfer is, I mean, obviously it's extremely difficult to make a living. You know, you're surrounded by the best players in the world, but it's very difficult to have a home life as well. To find a balance between the two, and that's why I admire, you know, people like Jack Nicklaus, we're able to find the time, you know, in between playing like a genius, you know, to be a great father and a great husband as well.
Yeah, those examples are there's some great examples out there, and it's a cool way to kind of transition to the next topic. You know, when you stopped drinking and you got the help from, God, man, some of the icons, the true, you know, bastions of our game, Jack Nicklaus, Tom Watson.
Yeah,
it really was a sign of what kind of community we golfers have, and you know, for some of us, we may not have known that really even existed.
Yeah, you know, the people out here on tour and in professional golf and in general, and I think, you know, it transfers over to professional sports. There's tremendous empathy and a great deal of support. Obviously in team sports, but especially in individual sports and a game like golf, which is it can be incredibly lonely both on and off the golf course. But Jack Nicklaus and Tom Watson were both really instrumental, especially Tom, who has been such a great friend, you know, like a big brother to me over the last 15 years. He has been, you know, there for me every time I've been down, and you know, that's been a lot.
Boy, I tell you, David, it reminds me of, I know you remember when the late Payne Stewart went down in the plane crash, and we turned around. I think we were playing in Orlando. We just finished the Disney event, and I think he died the next day, and we turned around for the funeral a few days later, and it was eye-opening to me as a younger guy to see what the golfing community looked like and what they how they showed up and what that looked like for that event. And then, you know, thinking about what these guys did for you and the support you've got, it's a pretty cool thing that otherwise I may not have known.
Yeah, it really is. You know, that you know, particular occasion was, you know, it's something that I think about a lot. You know, when I'm on a golf course, I think about Payne, especially when it comes to the Ryder Cup or the Open Championship. You know, I kind of looked after him when he came to the UK and, you know, showed him around and spent a lot of time with him. And he did exactly the same for me, you know, when I came to the United States.
Well, that wraps up the front nine, but don't go anywhere. The David Faraday interview is only about halfway finished. So we're going to take a quick pause, but come back. This is Golf with Jay Delsing on 101 ESPN.
Are you looking for a golf training facility and PGA pros to help you out year-round? Make sure you get to Golf Tech. They've been in St. Louis since 2007 and have three convenient locations to serve you. They've got state-of-the-art video equipment, and you can take your lesson home with you and replay it as much as you'd like. Start with a golf swing evaluation for only $125 and let a Golf Tech coach customize a game plan for you. 314-721-GOLF. You can find them online as well, golftech.com-St. Louis. Play better. Swing better. Golf Tech.
I got a big shout out and a thank you to Whitmore Country Club for supporting my golf show. I don't know if you know, Whitmore Country Club has 72 holes of golf. There's a 24-hour fitness center and has a extremely large pool complex. This is a family-friendly country club to belong to. There's a kids club in the main clubhouse right near the fitness center. There are golf leagues, skin games, members, tournaments, couples events are available all year long. If you join at Whitmore, you also get access to the Missouri Bluffs, the Links of Dardenne, and the Golf Club of Wentzville. And the cart fees are already included in that membership. There are no food or beverage minimums, no assessments. Go out and see my friend Bummer out in the clubhouse. He is an absolute jewel and a wonderful guy that will tell you all you need to know. Or you can call Whitmore at 636-926-9622.
After 25 years on the PGA Tour, Jay Delsing takes you behind the scenes from the eyes of a pro. Now back to more golf with Jay Delsing on 101 ESPN.
Well, welcome back, St. Louis. This is Golf with Jay Delsing. I'm your host, Jay. I've got John here with me. And let's get right back to the David Faraday interview here on the Back Nine, Golf with Jay Delsing.
Let's talk a little bit about your show. You guys you've just finished your eighth full season of your show. Wow, 100 episodes.
Yeah.
You've hit these milestones. I mean, how the hell did you do this? I mean, I look at the people, Bud, that you've interviewed, and I look at the list of guests. You know, I keep waiting for my invitation, but I guess the mail just doesn't deliver this way. And I mean, why do these people want to come on and talk with you?
You know, that's an exceptionally good question. And I don't, like most exceptionally good questions, I don't know the answer to it. I think it's got a lot to do, though, with, you know, the game is it's like heroin. People get addicted to it. And you know, the one thing that, you know, is the common thread, obviously, you know, in my show is people have to be, whether they're an actor or a musician, a politician or an athlete, you know, they have to have an interest in golf. I mean, that's it. I mean, they don't even have to play very much, you know, to be on my show. But people want to talk about it. They want to talk about the game. And in that process, you know, they end up talking about themselves. And it's I just ask the first question and then I listen. You know, I love interviewers, you know, people like Johnny Carson and Michael Parkinson was kind of an idol of mine growing up. I used to love his show in the UK. Graham Norton, you know, as well. It's they all have one thing in common. It's they listen. You get a lot of interviewers that have got questions in mind, and they're determined, you know, to get them over. And it's almost as if they don't listen to the answer to the previous question. You know, they're so keen on getting the next one in. Excuse me.
The show has been incredible, and the thing that for me that I love the most about the show, Bud, is somehow you've managed, through the game of golf, to connect with these extraordinary people. And I just look at myself and just go, man, I'm 58 years old. I've never had an honest job in my life. And this game.
Me too.
I mean, it's this friggin' game, and it's uncanny how great a game it is.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's so addictive. And, you know, we need to keep it that way. You know, get more women and children involved in it, because I remember, you know, growing up, it was my dad that played. And, you know, when your father plays, you know, generally speaking, you know, a little boy or whatever will come along and that kind of thing. But if your mother plays, you know, the whole family shows up. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, if you get the backbone of that family, And more times than not, at least in my estimation, you know, these women are the backbone of the family, and they're gonna herd those cats in that direction. And let's talk a little bit about the Troops First Foundation. You're building homes. I mean, how did you get involved in this? And I know this is about your eighth year in that, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a derivative, I think, of where I grew up, Jay. You know, I grew up in a war zone in the 60s and 70s and 80s in Northern Ireland, when there were, you know, troops on the street and roadblocks and checkpoints and bombs going off and sectarian murders, you know, every, you know, day or you know, it seemed like that, you know, at the time. And it didn't feel abnormal to me. That's just the way the world was. And when I moved to the United States, you know, I fell in love with this place so quickly. And when 9/11 happened, I was horrified at the thought of things like that happening here. I couldn't bear the thought of it coming here. You know, so it took me a while to figure out what I wanted to do, but I ended up going to Iraq in, I think, 2006 to entertain
our troops, and they weren't my troops at the time because I wasn't yet an American citizen. But I came back from Iraq stunned at the quality of the kids that we have out there and the job that they were doing under the most difficult of circumstances. You know, things like the restraint that they showed on a daily basis, not pulling the trigger. And the love they had for each other, the compassion they had for the people in Iraq. And I needed to do two things. I needed to be an American citizen, and so I could call them my troops. And I needed to try to do something for them when they came home broken. You know, it's all very well. I've been to Iraq a couple of times and to Afghanistan. You know, you spend a week there and you go around forward operating bases and they fly around in helicopters surrounded by special forces. And it's the most incredible privilege, you know, to be over there. You know, and they thank you for being there all the time. And you know, one of the common threads is golf. Every forward operating base has some kind of a range, whether that's just whacking it into a net or hitting balls into the desert. You know, we were at a forward operating base on the Syrian border called Korean Village, and I ended up on the roof of the chaplain, his hut. And I remember it was the Reverend Tim Ferry, and there's a big Marine up there. Tom Watson was giving him lessons, and we were sitting in deck chairs, you know, watching. They broke open glow sticks and poured them over the golf balls, and they were like tracer bullets going out into the Arabian night, which is so black. You know, and I remember thinking to myself, you know, what an unbelievable moment. You know, a time to be able to spend, you know, and see this, you know, it just incredibly unusual thing, a beautiful thing like that.
Wow.
That's awesome. How'd you ever get, when did you first meet him? When did you first meet Dave Faraday?
You know how weird the tour is? It's such a small group of folks. He came over and I knew of him. But we certainly didn't have any sort of history or any sort of real friendship. And just by the way the pairings broke out, we wind up getting paired together, I don't know, four or five times in a short period of time, then maybe once on the weekend or something like that. And we just hit it off. We just had such a great time playing. As we played, we talked, we laughed. It was just, you know, we'd have lunch after. We just struck up our friendship that way. I was always a fan. We've always had fun together. And when the Troops First stuff started coming around, he had asked me to do go to San Antonio and to do some things for the Heroes and help them raise money. And of course, I've been honored. You and I have talked about this. You know, our generation didn't really have any involvement in the services. I didn't have any friends that enlisted. We didn't have a real fight. You know, my dad was in World War II. I know your dad was in the Korean War. And so, but I wasn't, and it wasn't even a consideration, you know? And so this really filled a nice void for me to feel as if I was more patriotic, for lack of
contributing
anything to say. Yeah. Just the people that I've met and the things that I want to continue to do. I mean, you're involved with me with another endeavor where we raised some money and bought a couple of service dogs for two fallen heroes. And I will tell you, folks, David and a guy named Rick Kell, who's the executive director of the Troops First Foundation, do you remember how emotional that audio portion he sent our board?
Yes. I remember how emotional you were on top of all of it. Yeah.
Oh my gosh! I mean, the four men in the room were crying. I mean, what these dogs do for you know, these people that have sacrificed and lost so much—it's incredible. But
so you're buddies with him when you're playing. Then it's a kind of a cool transition. He's done playing. Now you're you're kind of done. You're going to play a little bit more, and so you'd have that in common with him, kind of going forward. But when you guys play together. And some people don't even really realize that he played.
Right.
And he was a heck of a player.
Right.
What was he good at? What was his game look? What did it look like, Jay?
He was a really good putter. He was not long. He was not powerful. but he was straight off the tee, and he was just he was tidy. All aspects of his game. And one of the things, and what I mean by that is, he could save shots. He was economical on the golf course. He didn't throw a lot of things away. And, well, damn, he's won 10 times around the world.
Yeah, yeah.
He's been on two Ryder Cup teams. I mean, he pokes
and
fun.
And did at well him. On the in Ryder Cup, at least one. Yeah.
He pokes so much fun at his career. And, you know, he retired when he was 36 years old.
I love that story that he told. I think that's just so classic him, and it's just a lot of fun. And obviously, the TV people saw the personality that he has, and that's why they wanted him. They wanted some color. They wanted some fun.
I think he's done some writing before, too. This guy has got an opera-level voice. He can sing like crazy. He never does. He's got a lot of pretty incredible gifts that, you know, most of us don't have.
I think some of the other piece, and you were kind of talking about it with the whole military support, but the transition he made from player, obviously all kinds of personal transitions as far as marriages and his other challenges, etc. But that challenge to go from, and we can all relate to this, whether we're professional golfers or not, how do we make the challenges, heck, early years, from school to a career, from one career to another career. Those are not easy things. Sometimes somebody might fall into something that's a little bit comfortable, but normally there's a whole learning curve, there's discomfort, etc. He seems to have done incredibly well. And again, like a lot of things, he plays it down, but it's pretty impressive. You're in the middle of it. You're in the middle of transition, which is this radio show and other things that are happening.
Right. It's not easy. And I mean, you know, you get some punches thrown at you, and they hit, and you definitely feel vulnerable in a way. And one of the things that that stuck out in my mind with him is the CBS folks offered him this job, and he thought, you know, I'm only 36, I still got 4 or 5, maybe 6 years left to play, until he said he saw how much money they offered him, and then he said, does anybody want to buy a set of clubs? Yeah, I think it's I talked to him. He came to St. Louis and picked me up. We did something at Oakmont in October. And he said to me, I said, how are you doing? And he said, I'm doing the worst part is if I stay home too long. Mm-hmm. He said, I love to work, and I need to be doing something. And he said, you know, and he had his wife Anita with him, and she is an absolute rock and a very stabilizing force for him. And he just loves to, you know, he just did a Fred Couples interview, and he had worked for quite a while to get Fred on the schedule, because I don't think Fred was all that keen in opening the door to let people in. But I did not see that interview.
I've seen parts of it, and it's excellent. I want to see the whole thing. Yeah. And until what I liked about parts of it, and I think Faraday does a great job in his interviewing to do this, he really got Fred to open up and say some things that, even if you kind of know Fred, which I know a little bit through you, and I actually got to play with him once, you still go, wow, did you really think that? So I think it's an excellent interview. One other thing I want to throw out there, and I felt this when I played, I want to ask you about it. When David talked about being lonely on and off the golf course, meaning as a player, how hard that is, because you're not a team. You're kind of on your own, and it's not like guys are rooting against you, although they are.
Yeah, right, right.
But talk about that a little bit, Jay. And you know, you're such an extrovert, so did you feel that kind of loneliness, or that kind of being out there on an island type of a thing, on and off? Or is that more kind of a personal thing that maybe David felt?
Yeah. I'd be lying to say if I didn't feel like the feels that at certain times. The most difficult part about playing the tour is when it's not going well, and you don't. It's hard to find solace, you know, and any comfort in anything, because your game is not good. You're not hitting on many cylinders, and you're looking and searching, and we've seen it over the course of my career, how many times, and we've talked about this before, how many times have guys gotten into a rut and never been able to climb out?
Yeah.
And then also, you know, it takes so much strength to keep going, because when you have that lost feeling and the sensations in your swing and your game that used to work aren't working anymore, and you know that's that constant change in life. You know, things are always changing, and always you need to always adapt. And one of the things that helped me more than anything, Pearl, was to do my business when I got, you know, in back into my room. I'd get on my laptop and I'd start working my hospitality entertainment thing.
That helped you a lot, and that's paid dividends going forward, because you're kind of in the middle of it now, and you have such a successful career at handling the hospitalities, the outings, and that kind of thing. I just think what's interesting, too, we like to make the comparison from golf, professional golf. There's plenty of sales guys out there, same thing, right? They're not closing the sales. It's lonely out there on the road. And whether that sales guy or making presentations and things aren't going well. So whether you're a professional golfer or anybody that's traveling away from home, and we can have these feelings at home, for that matter, too, and in the office. But I think that's a great place that people could absolutely relate to. You're out on the road. You made 5 attempts at sales. Nobody's biting. You're going to the next place. You're wondering what's going on. The competition's kicking your butt. You're starting to question yourself. We can all relate to that.
Yeah, I was one of the thing I didn't mind being alone. I was one of those people that didn't mind being alone, and I still don't. But it's difficult. I mean, it gets overwhelming.
We're going to talk more about that. I do not see you as a guy that doesn't mind being alone, maybe for like 10 minutes. Oh. But, I mean, I can do days and weeks, as you know, because I'll go up to Canada and go fishing. I don't see that. That's for the psychology show that we have in a couple of weeks or a couple of months.
My mom, God rest her soul, taught me that everybody has their opinions, and it's just like a different part of their body, and some of them are a little stinky. So let's go ahead with that. You know what? That's going to wrap up.
I'm not leaving that alone.
I know. That's going to wrap up the back nine. Thanks for joining us, and stay with us, because we're going to move to the 19th hole. This is Golf with Jay Delsing on 101 ESPN.
Jerseyville Carpet and Furniture Gallery are a proud sponsor of Golf with Jay Delsing. They've been around since 1973, and it's been family-owned and operated the entire way. Father Danny Capps started it all. Now sons Matt and Jared are fully involved. And at Jerseyville Carpet and Furniture Gallery, they host the area's largest selection of Lazy Boy and Flex Steel furniture. Plus, you'll find a full-service Mohawk Color Center featuring carpet, hardwood, laminate, and waterproof flooring. Everything is professionally installed at Jerseyville Carpet and Furniture Gallery, plus easy to delivery and setup of new furniture however and wherever you want it. They'll also haul away all of your old furniture. Can't beat that deal. Going the extra mile, that's what Jerseyville Carpet and Furniture Gallery is all about. Find them online, jerseyvillecarpetfurniture.net, or call them 618-639-9858.
Most people think to get fit, you've got to be in the gym 5 days a week. Well, I used to think that too, but that was before I discovered 20 Minutes to Fitness. 20 Minutes to Fitness makes it possible to achieve in one 20-minute session a week what might require 3 hours or more a week at the gym. It reduces the time it takes to exercise by up to 90%. Their trainers can get you in shape no matter what your age or fitness level. They do it using special equipment and safe, medically-based approach. And all it takes is 20 minutes once a week. Honestly, 20 minutes once a week. Sound too good to be true? Your first session is free, so try it and see for yourself. They've got locations in Clayton and Chesterfield. To learn more, visit 20minutestofitness.com. 20 Minutes to Fitness. It's just 20 minutes just once a week, and it works for me. I just wanted to let you know that USA Mortgage has lowered its rates this month. That's right, they've lowered their rates. We are keeping them down as long as we can to take advantage of the great real estate market this spring. Buyers are flooding the market, values are going up, and USA Mortgage is ready to help you with you and your pre-approval, refi, or cash out opportunity. We can help you eliminate your mortgage insurance, shorten your term, or pay off debt. Please call Joe Schieser at 314-628-2015 to apply or get sound financial advice for your mortgage needs. Hurry while the rates are still low. You can apply online at usamortgage.com/Joe Schieser. That's S-C-H-I-E-S-Z-E-R. Or call him directly at 314-628-2015. NMLS number 231118.
You're listening to Golf with Jay Delsing on 101 ESPN. You can get involved in the show by emailing your questions and comments to jay@jaydelsinggolf.com.
Well, thanks for staying with us. This is Golf with Jay Delsing. My buddy John is with me, and we just finished 18 holes, and we're headed to a great part of the golf experience, the 19th hole. And a David Faraday interview. Folks, remember, we've got the other half, the second half of the Faraday interview will be aired next week. Golf with Jay Delsing.
Masters weekend, baby.
Masters weekend is going to be a perfect way to wrap up that interview, and then we'll also talk about Augusta. We'll talk about the golf course a little bit. We'll talk about the prestige, the first major.
And you do outings down there.
I do. I'll be down there. It's going to be great. It's going to be perfect. But let me do a quick shout out and thank you to Whitmore Country Club for sponsoring the Golf with Jay Delsing show here on 101 ESPN. There's 72 holes of golf at Whitmore, which just is incredible. There's access to other Whitaker golf courses like Missouri Bluffs, the Links of Dardenne, the Golf Club of Wentzville. All the cart fees are included in that membership. So there's no food or There's no food and beverage minimums. There's never an assessment at Whitmore Country Club. A 24-hour fitness center is located near the large pool complex. There's tennis courts. The year-round social calendar, this is really special, folks. It is we're talking about a really family-centric golf environment out here. There's a wonderful staff. There's holiday parties, picnics, date nights, live music, a kids club for your kids, great junior golf facilities and teams along with junior tennis and swim teams. You've got to go say hi to my friend Bummer Berry. He's one of the assistants in the golf shop. He's one of the most authentic and fun people you'll ever meet, and he'll tell you, answer any questions that you might have about Whitmore Country Club. You can reach them at 636-926-9622. Man, the Faraday interviews, it's hard to get off my mind, but let's go talk a little bit about the Texas Open this week. It's down in San Antonio, the TPC of San Antonio. One of the biggest, coolest hotels I've ever seen, the JW Marriott down there is, one of the things that when I've been to San Antonio, we actually use the facility there. We use the golf course. There's 36 holes of golf there. It's a Greg Norman design and a Pete Dye design. And some of the facilities there at the JW Marriott are just spectacular. One of the things to note about the Norman course, when it first came out, and it's probably been 10 years now that we played the Texas Open, maybe not quite that many. Don't anybody check up on that. That's another one of those vague facts.
We are
facts
not responsible for details and facts.
No.
So, just close counts.
Yeah. So somewhere along the line, that golf course was built. And I can remember playing it with a buddy of ours, Steve Lowry. He was an Alabama great guy, great PGA Tour career. And we played, and I looked at him after about seven holes and said, Steve? And he goes, I don't know what you're going to say, but he goes, I don't know if I can finish out here. We had a very, very breezy Texas morning, and the golf course was just so hard, so tight off the tee, extremely long. It happened to be wet as well because we had some spring rains, and the greens were so severe. They had to go in, and they had to clean out all these areas off the tee, Pearl, to make it playable off the tee, and then soften up a bunch of the greens. And
Is that the course they play for the tournament?
It is, and I've heard now that the players have really taken a liking more to the golf course than they had. And
because did they make some changes to
yes.
the course?
Okay. Yeah, they softened the greens and they made it more playable off the tee. And one of the things that needs to be noted, the Texas Open, if not the longest, is one of the longest standing events on the PGA Tour. And the fact that they got the date right before the Masters is really good for them. Their section there in San Antonio does a great job. They're involved in that tournament. It's real strong local flavor, and the Texas Open has always been a mainstay on the PGA Tour from the outset.
How did you do in that tournament? Did you have any good years out there in that?
You know, I had some nice finishes at some of the other courses. Oak Hills is one of my favorite courses we played there. I played my first Champions Tour event there. And kind of finished about 20th or 30th. Not that great. I had a couple of top 10 finishes when we played at, there's a golf course, La Quintera. Resort.
I know La Quintera.
Yeah, La Quintera Resort is associated with the Westin up there, and it's an old rock quarry that they converted into into a golf course. They have got some real scenic, real bluffs and real elevated holes. It wasn't Tom Weisskopf is the designer. Not a great course by any means, but it's kind of a fun course to play. There's some oddities. You went to one hole. There's six flags of Texas, but it's up to one side of the course, and that's why, you know, that course will never go down as one of the best around because of, you know, you've got a roller coaster in your
backswing. Is the Texas Open known for wind or not, kind of standard-wise? Because that'd be a little surprising before the Masters, whoever is, not all the guys are going to get to play in the Masters, obviously, right. But quite a few of them, and they're not going to want to play in a whole bunch of wind and then go play Augusta.
Right, because the wind just beats you down. It can beat up your game, having to hit so many low shots and control shots. And I feel like when the Texas Open was played more in the fall before the schedule changed, I felt like we got more wind.
Maybe that's what I'm remembering.
Yeah, so this is the first week of April this year, and I don't think you're going to deal with a whole lot of wind.
So what kind of shots, if you're getting ready to play this tournament, what kind of shots? You and I used to go walk around sometimes just with two or three clubs I'm carrying and say, let's just go hit some wedges and some putts. What kind of shots do the guys need to be focused on to play this golf course to the utmost? It might be a little unique around the green or something like that.
Norman courses, for me, my take on them, they're extremely penal around the greens. Very sharp edges, meaning you miss the green on the short side, you're likely to have your ball roll down a hill and be 15 to 20 feet below the surface. So you're going to have to hit either typically speaking, pro, you're going to have to hit something high and soft from there, because the way, if it's a linksy sort of course, you might be able to play some bump and runs, but not here. It's going to be soft.
That's right in line with the question we had, the email in. Joe talking, we said, hey, you got to commit. So what you're saying is you better commit to your shot here. So the fairways are going to be pretty tight.
Yep.
They're going to have to hit these soft flop shots. And if you're not committed and you're not going to go do your thing and stay aggressive, you're going to have some serious trouble.
Right. And I think Greg's influence had a lot to do. You've been to Australia with me. You've seen the way some of the golf courses are. Royal Melbourne and some of those courses, they almost have the green itself roll straight into the bunkers. And there's a lot of sharp edges where where over in the States we have, you know, we'll have a fringe, and then we might even have, you know, a couple of feet of longer rough, but not in Australia. And I see a lot of that influence in a lot of Norman courses. You also have caddied and played at the Sugarloaf Golf TPC in Atlanta.
Yes, I have.
And remember how sharp some of the edges there were. The eighth hole comes to mind, Pearl, that long dog leg, kind of like a little sweeping dog leg to the right where Greg perched the green up in a strange angle that if you miss the green to the right, your ball might roll 35 yards.
Yeah, I remember that was a tough place as well. So that's probably what I remember, the severity around the greens. You got to really commit to what the heck you're going to do there.
Yeah, but and ironically, you know, you take the modern game onto this Norman course, and it's not long. Mm. You know, it's not a long golf course. Steve and I were towards the end of our PGA Tour careers when we were playing there, and both of us were long for our era, but neither of us are long for this era.
Well, then if the wind doesn't blow, are they going to shoot some low numbers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every single week.
But to your point, if the wind does blow and they're just trying to hit those moon balls and not shaping their shots and not keeping their trajectory down and they're missing greens, there's going to be a problem.
Yeah, there's no question about that. There's no question about that. I saw that this year at Shinnecock doing the Open. I was amazed at the 17th hole of Shinnecock. It was only a 170-yard par 3, but the brilliance in the way that the golf hole is set up, the green is angled at you in such a way that when the wind blows, it is really difficult to hit. And for my eye, I'd stand up there, the wind was always blowing in from the left. You know, for a right-handed golfer, that is a bear. That is such a tough wind. And I was always thinking, these guys are going to take something and hold it, hit a little draw into the, and not one of them did. They all sent that ball up in the air and let the wind just push it down to the right. And you know how that goes. Pearl, if that ball slightly mishit, the wind just takes it and moves it. And so I was seeing shots. I mean, I saw Rory mishit one, and it wound up right of the right greenside bunker on a 170-yard shot. You don't see that very often.
The wind is the equalizer, and maybe the only equalizer these days. And even that, with the equipment and the ball, the way the ball's changed. How many times have we talked about, I would love to see the present-day player with some clubs from 35 years ago and the pro-trage, low-trage, those old Bellotta Titleist balls. And I would like to see if they're still going to make the same club selection and right. Hit the same shot selection. I don't think they would be able to.
I don't either, and I would think that that certain players would thrive and certain players would go away.
Absolutely.
I think totally they would. Agree. I think they'd go away. The other thing is, think about this for a minute. With this club head speed, that Bellotta was actually flying through the air egg-shaped because it was a wound ball, folks. It had real rubber bands in there. They'd have to change balls almost every shot.
I didn't even think about that, especially as hard as they're hitting it and with the clubs they're using. No, but they have to use the clubs we used 35 right. years ago. But even that, with the club head speed and the strength of these guys, you're right. They would be changing them. And I remember caddying, you changed them quite a bit. Not just because when you cut the daylights out of them.
Whoever did that.
Or hit a cart path or whipped it off a tree or whatever.
Right, right. No, I remember changing your balls a lot, and
the cover was so soft, you literally could hit it nowadays in a waste area, and you would scuff it such that you weren't going to play another hole with it, just out of a regular waste area.
And remember when I'd get my new, I'd change my wedges out probably four times a year, so once a quarter I'd get new wedges in, and I'd actually practice with old balls to try to take a little bit of the sharpness off of those wedges and the grooves so they wouldn't tear up the balls.
It would scale the ball.
Yeah, it would just scale the ball right off the ball.
We would change them a lot.
Yeah, we really did. Yeah,
that's also when you used to get free golf balls. Now you're not getting as many free golf balls.
You're trying to rub that in?
Are you getting free golf balls still?
It's been quite a while. I think that, you know, it's funny. There's that saying out there, you know, they kind of forget who you are. Oh, they have forgotten St. Louis. That is for sure. Those Titleist shipments don't come this way anymore. I used to be able to give, you know, guys would go, hey, do you got a 3-wood? I guess I'd be like, yeah, I've got a lot of stuff. I don't have anything anymore. And
give me 3. That was
the tour player
there.
Motto. Yeah. Or if it's free, it's for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You know, and give me three. One of the things that was so fun is that right around the holidays, you know, my friend, do you remember my friend George Willett?
Yes, I do.
TaylorMade?
I do.
Great guy. Loved hockey. We talked Blues hockey all the time, and he was from Toronto. And he would say, I said, George, I'm thinking I'm going to need a new driver. He goes, Jay, Christmas is, you know, 4 weeks away. I'm out of drivers. I go, what are you talking about? How can you be out of drivers? He goes, you know, all of your friends come in and they fill up their, you know, they're looking for stocking stuffers. It's going to be drivers. So
I think Steve Pate at one point may have held the record as far as number of clubs that he was given.
And Pater's one of those guys, I don't really think he hoards them. He just loves to tinker with that sort of stuff. Yeah. And so I don't think he was like...
I would say is considered a hoarder, but he tinkered with all of them.
Yeah, it wasn't
but
like...
But there's hundreds of them.
Hundreds of them. He had putters. I'll never forget. Pater won, I forget what event he won, and I'm playing a practice run. I played a practice run with him for 20 years almost every week, and he went and had a new putter out. I go, you didn't putt well last week? He goes, nah, I did.
Yeah.
I go, what are you doing with that?
Some guys like that. I was the exact opposite as you know.
I'm a dinosaur, too. I would stick with something, and, man, it's brutal. Until I absolutely hated it, I couldn't
putt
with
it. Well,
at some
point, I remember you saying to me, if I don't do this, I'm giving up so much to the field, it's a joke.
I learned, when the technology boomed and there was new stuff coming out, you had to give it a try. Man, that's going to wrap up the 19th hole. Pearly, thanks so much for spending the morning with me.
A lot of fun, Jay.
Brad, thanks for working the board, and we need to we're going to get you back on the show. We need an update on that driver that we talked about last week.
We're going to start having some video posts on your website and some of the social media, And maybe that's Sizzle is the model for these golf lessons.
Yeah,
I like that idea.
Throw that out there, and we'll just have him. He'll be wanting to bowl in no time. You know, we'll have him so frustrated. It'll be perfect. But yeah, that'll wrap it up. Have a great golfing spring, St. Louis. We'll be back at you next week, and hit him straight, St. Louis.
That was Golf with Jay Delsing, brought to you by Whitmore Country Club. Tune in next Sunday from 7 to 8 for more from Jay, John, and the other pros and experts from the golf world. In the meantime, you can find all of Jay's shows at 101ESPN.com, as well as at jaydelsinggolf.com.